Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubiconglobal.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Town Hall. I'm your host, Amy Coonan Taylor, and today I am joined by Eddie Donaldson for what is sure to be a very fun but also unconventional episode. I got connected to Eddie through our founder and CEO, Nate Morris, whose pride for his home state of Kentucky literally knows no bounds. And when he heard about all of the really awesome stuff Eddie was doing for Louisville, we knew we had to have him come on and tell his story. So thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thanks for having me. Super excited to share what we're up to.
So our podcast is generally categorized as like a sustainability podcast, but sustainability in a lot of its forms doesn't always have to mean environmental. And today I think we're going to talk a lot more about sustainable communities and social impact messaging. But before we get into all of that, I know you have a very cool story, and I want you to walk me through how a Kentucky kid ended up in the California art scene, and not just ended up in the art scene, but really at the heart of everything going on creative in California.
Well, when born and raised in Louisville, or at least mostly raised in Louisville, my mother passed away when I was 16 or 15 years old. So I came to live in Los Angeles with her sister, my aunt Doris Johnson, who, interesting enough, is kind of a figure in Louisville. She was a musician on the scene on Washington Street and all the cool like bars in the 60s. I came to live with her. And after, you know, losing your mom, barely having a relationship with your father, and being dumped in a whole new city, which is completely different than where you were, you kind of options are limited to where you kind of migrate towards. So, you know, fortunately and unfortunately, depending on which lens you look at it through, I kind of found myself migrating towards gangs here in Los Angeles because that was, you know, it felt like a safe place for me, and I was accepted for who I was. And, you know, I just kind of started hanging out in the wrong places, let's say. And then I was introduced to graffiti, you know, and I was like, hey, this is a safer kind of environment with a similar fraternal brotherhood feel, you know, a crew of guys that really care about each other, look out for each other, and will do anything for each other. So, you know, even though I wasn't the greatest artist, that's just kind of where I ended up. And then from there, you know, kind of, you know, naturally being a business-minded person, I guess, I've tried to figure out a way where, since I wasn't the greatest graffiti artist in the world, how can I actually turn this into a business? How can I monetize these kids' skills? And how can we make a business out of this? I guess you could say, you could call it foresight to a certain extent. You know, none of us knew what we were doing as far as a business was concerned, or the potential viability for business. But, you know, I just had a vision that one day this would be an accepted art form and that people would pay for it. And that's kind of what got me in the business of art.
And so what's now bringing you back to your roots, back to Louisville?
Well, that's an interesting conversation as well. I mean, you know, given the fact that I lost my mom early, Louisville was kind of a four-letter word for me. You know, I loved the basketball aspect of my hometown, whether it be Louisville or U of L or UK, and I'd always watch the games and stay connected, you know, through athletics. But I, you know, it just was kind of a negative feeling when I thought about home, you know, based on my loss. And a friend of mine, Danny Wimmer, who does some music festivals back in Louisville, he does Hometown Rising, Bourbon and Beyond, and Louder Than Life, started these festivals. And we had some business together, and he was like, you should come see what we're doing here. It's pretty cool. So I went home. And, you know, I have to say, I was completely shocked at how much change had happened in the city, how cool the scene, the art scene was and the music scene, and how much, you know, how progressive it was considering how it was when I left 30 years ago or whatever. So, you know, and I reconnected with a lot of my high school friends, and I really kind of felt that special feeling, you know, like how special it is to be in Louisville and how special the people are. So I decided I wanted to try to figure out some ways that I could bring some of the stuff that I'm doing here back home and not only expose people at home to how cool what LA and international graffiti and street art scene feels like, but also get some of these guys from Paris or Australia or London to touch ground in Louisville and see how special the ground and the people are there.
So that's really kind of the inspiration behind the Wall Sluggers mural project. And talk a little bit more about that and what exactly you guys are doing with Branded Arts.
Well, you know, it's natural for me to try and, you know, bring something that's so accessible to me back home and something that we've been doing for over 20 years. So I got together with some people here in LA and we decided we wanted to put together a mural project, not a mural festival, because it's not going to happen in a short period of time. I'd like to have it start during Derby, create, you know, do our first activation and then end with a bang during the Tri-Festival period in October with Danny Wimmer Presents, you know, not officially with them, but during that time. So that gives us a 7 or 8 month time period to execute as many beautification projects as we can, whether it be for a community or for commercial, because we're having a lot of conversations in different areas. You know, one of the things we're trying to do is we would like to revitalize the area surrounding the skate park. And we're talking to the city, and I've got Diamond Supply Company here in LA that wants to help fund it. And, you know, we'll take some skaters back and we'll do a huge skate day when we unveil the mural. But then also some of the stuff we're trying to do is we'd love to do some beautification at the Healing Place, which is the number one recovery center in Louisville, at least to my knowledge. They have three facilities and we've talked about painting, you know, doing something at all three. And then we're also talking to Johnson Middle School about coming in and doing something in their gymnasium and in the hallways that's motivational and inspirational to the kids on the ground. So, I mean, it's really a pretty thick and robust program and ambitious program. But considering all the love for the arts in Louisville, I think getting everything funded should be, I don't want to say easy, but I'm confident that we'll find the funds we need.
You have such a large network of artists and just like people around you and talent and friends and industry names. As we look back on the last decade, while also like looking ahead to the next, I mean, this is going to be hard. This is going to be like picking your favorite child. But like, who do you think were some of the most influential artists, famous, well-known or not, over the last 10 years in the scene? And also, who do you think is really going to make an impact on the next 10?
Wow, that's a tough question. You know, one of the things that I always say when people ask me questions like this or, you know, give me the credit for being where I am and what I do is I don't know anything else that no one else knows. Like, I'm not the smartest art guy in the world. You know, I'm not Jeffrey Deitch or, you know, I just happen to have a lot of really cool friends that make art. And I'm just blessed to be in the right place at the right time. But if I have to answer that question, I would say, you know, Shepard Fairey is probably to me one of the most influential artists that I've ever worked with and, of my time because of the reach that he has been able to accomplish and a lot of the social change that he's been able to activate or be a part of. And he keeps that as a common denominator to most of the things that he does. You know, he has a ton of integrity. He understands the value of social economics and he understands the impact that his art has on people that see it. So, you know, I'd give him the probably, you know, that credit to being one of the most influential artists of our time, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, obviously Banksy is hugely famous and hugely popular, but I don't think Banksy's making near the change in the world that Shepard Fairey's been able to accomplish. And I admire that. And as far as the future goes, the landscape is changing so much. When I got into the art scene, it was like you had to pay dues, you had to pay your time and you had to put your time in and you had to get the experience. And now with the age of the internet and how just media in general has changed, who knows who the next new artist is going to be? I don't think it's going to be one. I think it's going to be thousands of new artists that have change or have the ability to make change and create impact, because you know, everyone has a voice now when it comes to art or creativity or music, you know, based on their ability to publish, you know, almost immediately, anything they want. So I don't think there's going to, I think it's going to change the landscape to who's the guy, but who's the, yeah, I think it's going to be the entire generation that actually is credited for that space.
You talk a lot about, you know, change and social good. And I'm curious because obviously Rubicon's an environmental company that's trying to make a change. And, you know, we're trying to do what we can. How do you think that environmental sustainability, social messaging, you know, how do you think all of that plays a role in art? You know, I've done some research about green graffiti, and I don't necessarily mean, you know, less toxins in the paint can, but do you think that some of the messages that you've seen on some of the murals and art are now kind of leaning more towards environmental messaging? What are some of those trends like?
Well, I mean, yes, there's, you know, we understand the power we have to move the needle and to communicate to the masses, you know, when it comes to street art and graffiti. I mean, that's the core reason for doing so is messaging. You know, it started with like, look at me, and now it's look at these issues, or let's beautify a neighborhood. There's a ton of people in the space that are now making different choices to materials that they use. And there's a ton of manufacturers in the business that are looking for new solutions. You know, I just invited a guy yesterday named DJ that has a company called Can Love, and their whole idea is they recycle cans and they make these beautiful hearts with the inside of the can facing out. So you can see the different colors. They take the top of the cans and they add a stem to it and make them flowers. Yeah, it's really, really cool. And, you know, so everyone is a little bit more conscious as the world wakes up. You know, people have to be responsible for what their footprint is and what their message is in regards to that footprint. So, you know, whether we find perfect solutions to the environmental issues when it comes to materials or application, it's really how we speak about it and how and the message that we leave behind, because at the end of the day, that's what art is. It's a form of messaging and communication, hopefully to impact and create change or motivate people to activate something, what, you know, whatever it is. You know, the message for our next show is called Love Los Angeles Style. And, you know, it's all about love. Everything that we're doing and every bit of messaging is about activating love. So, you know, there's a huge social impact in, you know, component to what we do. And I think most of the people that, you know, are involved are waking up and utilizing that tool for that, for those purposes.
What does that show, the love show, what does that look like? What's that going to be all about?
I think we'll have about 40 to 50 artists from mostly Los Angeles natives. We've taken the Love American Style show from the 60s or 70s, and we've recreated the logo. We're actually working on one that says Love Louisville Style that I was going to toss out to the community and see if it sticks. And we're, you know, just taking a look at, you know, the tagline is love in all the right places. You know, I think love is the order of the day. Like, you know, we need more love, less hate. You know, I'm not a genius for that philosophy or that thought process, but it's like, you know, once again, social impact. I think it's my job or my duty at this moment to try and raise as much awareness as we can for love. So I've picked 45 artists so far, and everyone's challenged to come up with some sort of message that messages love. It's pretty basic.
I'm trying to think of, you know, I read through the PowerPoint that was sent to me about the Wall Sluggers program. You know, I've stalked your Instagram a lot. I've, you know, done my fair share of research, and it kind of seems like you have a lot of hands and a lot of different buckets, but one of your main passions seems to be marketing and branding, right? Like what we talked about at the beginning is you were trying to find a way to monetize this art and this. So do you have any advice for aspiring marketers, you know, with the age of, like you were talking about, the age of the internet and the age of social media? You know, everybody thinks that they're marketing, and more importantly, marketing themselves. And as someone who is a millennial in a marketing department, you know, curious to pick your brain on how you think marketing can be a really impactful way to tell a story.
Well, you know, as an old timer, right? You know, I had a conversation this morning on my way to Equinox with someone, and it was like back to that whole paid dues thing, right? if you look at the landscape, it's changed as well. You know, kids get famous overnight with a great idea on Instagram. They go from 10,000 followers to 50,000 followers, right? And then there's the sense of entitlement from the younger kids because it's a lot easier for them to garner these kind of eyeballs or make waves per se. But at the end of the day, for me, it's all a hustle. You know, most of the people I know that have what they have didn't get it handed to them. They had to get up every day and go out and get it. You know, I watched the Dave Chappelle special last night about the Mark Twain gift, and I was blown away with the admiration that people had for him. But at the end of the day, it was because he stayed at it 24/7. He never stopped. You know, there's a statement that Nas came out with that says sleep is the cousin of death. You know, and that sounds drastic, right? But at the end of the day, my point is, if you're really trying to be in the marketing business, or you really want to make change, or you really, whether it's philanthropy, whatever you're doing, you got to do it all the time. You got to do it 100%. You got to put the gas, the pedal to the metal. There's no stopping. You know, that's been that's my number one reason that I've been able to do what I do, is because every minute of the day I'm working. You know, even when I'm playing basketball, I'm trying to size up somebody on the court to see what they do, who they are, and how we can make some magic together. So for me, any advice I would have to younger kids, or even the kids that work in my office, is like, you're never off work, whether you have a 9-to-5 or you are an entrepreneur. You're always working, because that's the only thing that's going to get you where you want to go.
I think that's, you know, really solid advice. And we talked about the kids in your office. So you're running the marketing division. That's really kind of the day-to-day thing that you're doing. How do you bring all of your different hustles together?
Well, I mean, it's easy. Like, I think I hinted to this in the beginning. It's like, I don't have a roadmap to where I'm going, because most of my business is so, you know, as you said, unconventional in the beginning of this conversation. So, you know, I'll have someone in my office to talk about how we're going to have an event for them. And then by the time they leave, they've decided they fell in love with one of the artists on the wall and they want to do a collaboration and manufacture some product. Like right now, I'm working on doing some collaborations with Lamar Jackson from the Ravens, you know, an old U of L football player. And it wasn't hard for me. I just made a phone call to a friend and was like, hey, would you like to do a collaboration with Lamar? So it's like, I just have so many, it goes back to never sleeping, never stop working, and look at every situation you come into as a potential opportunity. Everything I'm doing just feeds each other. There's no, you know, it's not planning. It's just, it's the relationships that I've built. And I guess the luck of the draw, maybe. I don't know.
Eddie, this has been like really cool for me. You know, we got connected a couple months back through Nate, and then through Nate's friend Todd, and, you know, they all had the best things to say about you. But one of the things that I love about interviewing guests on the town hall is we kind of go through your professional timeline. You know, I wanted to find out what you were doing career wise, ask for advice, but now I kind of want to like humanize you a little bit and play our rapid fire game. It's quick. It's 10 quick questions. And then you just answer the first thing that comes to your mind. And I think with your like a hand in every bucket, I think you're going to have some really cool answers. You ready?
Sure.
What is one song that you could listen to over and over again and not get sick of it?
Umi Says by Mos Def.
Name a career highlight for you from 2019.
Working with Akon on Lighting Los Angeles.
If you could have dinner with any celebrity, dead or alive, who would you choose and why?
Barack Obama. Because I think the first Black president of America, regardless of the political side or accomplishments, that would be an amazing conversation.
What is one quote that you've heard throughout your life or your career? What's something that you've heard that's really stuck with you?
You have to be a lion. Sometimes you have to be a lion so you can be the lamb that you are.
What is one thing that you wish people understood more about street art and graffiti?
I wish people understood that artists just want to be loved.
When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Michael Jordan.
Where's your favorite place to eat in LA? Where would you take Barack Obama?
Nick's on Beverly.
And I think I've learned the answer to this one through the episode, but if you could play any sport professionally, what would you play and why? Basketball, right?
Golf. No, golf. And the reason I'd play golf is because I can't play golf. It's difficult. I take lessons all the time and I can't figure it out. And it's like a challenge. You know, basketball is easy to me. I feel confident I can beat most people I come in contact with unless that's what they do. But golf is something I just can't seem to get a grasp on.
What does your morning routine look like?
I get up, I pray, I work out for 15 to 20 minutes in my bathroom with some light weights, feed my dog. I go to yoga at 9 a.m. for an hour and a half, and then I find myself either at a meeting or at Equinox after that.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
That's changed over the years, but currently I think being somewhat at peace with the things that I'm doing and the relationships that I'm involved in, you know, whether it's money or it's friends or it's romantic, I think just having some sense of ease when it comes to the things that I'm doing and not angst.
Before I let you hop off, where can people learn more about you, about the work that you and your friends are doing, and how to really get involved in the conversation? What's the best way for people to reach out?
Well, I mean, here we go with the age of the internet. For me, I mean, the most active way to figure out, or the most active thing to follow for me is Instagram, and that would be at Guerrilla One, GUERILLAONE, because that's what I'm on a daily basis, whether it be posts or stories.
Eddie, I feel really inspired, and I know that everybody who listens, you know, when the episode comes out or after is going to feel that way too. I think there's a large need in our community for more people to create and express themselves and, like you said, do more things with love. So I just want to say thank you so much for spending your morning with me and not doing like 10 types of workouts.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.